You have never been a fan of foreign entanglements, and you're a soldier, a colonel with a distinguished record. So how do you feel about this withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan?
Well, I think we're on the right course, as I've said before. And, you know, I want to bring up Iraq first before I then I'll come back to Afghanistan.
Sure.
But, you know, when I first elected and in the first few months of 2011, I traveled back to Iraq after four combat tours. I went there as a member of Congress. And at that time, they were still thinking through, the administration was still thinking through the exit strategy and the way forward. And among the courses of action they were looking at was keeping 10,000 troops there in Iraq. I was asked my view on it, and after careful consideration, I did not think that's what we should do. We had spent the better part of a decade preparing Iraq to be self-reliant and to be able to take care of their own security, grow their economy. And at the end of the day, I was pleased that the administration decided that at the end of 2011, our troops would be home. And we have been home now for almost a year. And what I said is, look, it's not, there's still going to be spasms of violence periodically in Iraq, but I believe that it would be relatively stable and relatively friendly towards us. And, you know, I believe that that will continue to be the case going forward. You know, with regard to Iraq, you know, I was concerned back in 08 when I heard candidate Obama talking about his way forward, about what he wanted to do in Iraq. But when he got into office, he studied the issue, he listened carefully, and he changed his mind on how to proceed. And I think because of that, we concluded our operations in Iraq that we were able to accomplish those objectives that we were looking to get done. Now with Afghanistan, you know, he certainly didn't get any points from his base when he surged in Afghanistan, but I think that that was the right call because it set the conditions for where we are today, which is we're in a place where we're going to be done. In the next Congress, we'll be done with Afghanistan. And I think it's the right course of action. We are focused now on the final preparations of the Afghan security forces, making sure that they have the competency and the equipment necessary to secure that country, and our troops will be repositioned back here to the United States.
Now, what if we pull out and you find women getting whipped in the streets and you find, you know, horrible Taliban excesses and the rest of it? Is it really up to those in Afghanistan to, you know, make their own decisions, or does the United States have to go back in?
Well, first of all, that's what the preparation that's underway at this moment, these final steps, that's what we're addressing. I mean, we're preparing the Afghan security forces to affiliate with locals, to understand networks, to be able to gain intelligence so that they can provide that kind of security. So I'm confident, having seen...
You are?
Well, I'm confident that we've got that right approach. Look, if...
Well, the approach is right, but are we making any headway?
I think we are. You know, and let me just say that I think expectations are important to unpack and put on the table because they're different from Iraq. With regard to Afghanistan, there really is no history of a strong centralized government.
Right.
So the expectations for the central government are low. The expectations at the local level are higher. And so, you know, I think as we make these final preparations for the security forces, the important thing is that there's a connectedness between the local, provincial, and the central government, that they share information, that there's a facility in terms of their ability to move back and forth from a security standpoint and from an institutional standpoint. And I think that we've got that way forward. You know, Adam Smith is somebody I admire. He represents from the state of Washington. He's just back from Afghanistan in the last few days. And he's a very candid guy, and he gives a optimistic assessment of our ability to execute this plan as it's laid out.
Tell me about Iran and what we should be doing there.
Well, I think at the
By the way, I just should remind everybody that Chris Gibson was a long-term member, a colonel in the United States Army, and a very thoughtful guy on this stuff. So what do we do there?
Well, actually, I think that the approach we're taking right now is making a difference. You know, I start with the premise that war is not in anyone's interest. It is not in the United States' interest, it's not in Israel's interest, and it most certainly is not in Iran's interest. So what's important then in this negotiation is, starting from that vantage point, how do we convince the Iranians that when we say we're not going to allow them to have this capability, this nuclear capability, that they understand that we're serious about it and we're going to prevent them from having it. So the sanctions that are in place are hurting their ability to move capital internationally. All of this is having an impact on their banking system.
You got a big inflation problem.
They do. And you recall the moments when they've been under most stress in the last decade, 2003 and 2009. Their ability to provide services to their people has a direct impact on the stability of that government. And so the economic hardship that's coming from these sanctions, I think we're getting their attention.
Well, I think a lot of people in this country worry that if you can convince some very misguided people to get on an airplane and kill themselves, that they worry about the ability of the society as a whole, the Iranian society, the mullahs and the rest, to say the same thing. Okay, you know, we don't really care. We'll just, if it means we all get eradicated, we all get eradicated.
Well, you know, I had an opportunity to meet one of the dissidents in the fall of 2006. He actually had just been released from prison in Iran, and he came to the United States. And so he gave a talk out at Stanford University, and he was surrounded in a room with people that were very hawkish on Iran. And I thought he said something very, very poignant. And I would hope that it really sunk in that room. And he said, if you want to unite Iran, then bomb it. And his point was this. He said, look what happened to this country after 9/11. And his larger point was this, that finding a peaceful approach to influence the Iranian people. He said the best way to influence Iran was through the internet and to do it through education rather than through military action. Because the people in Iran yearn to live free, to live to their God-given potential, and that towards that end, actions that we take to empower them would be better than any martial action that we take, because that would actually drive them the mullahs.
Okay, Chris, I only have a minute and 40 seconds, but very quickly they say no. You know, they fool with us. They say, okay, we're going to talk to you. Then they don't talk to you and the rest of it. And they say, no, we're going to build a bomb. What do you do then?
No, I don't see them ending up in that spot, because not only is the pressure significant, but I think that we're working in a concerted way with our allies. And there's there's certainly full spectrum considerations of what's going on. I think we are going to be successful. I am.
Chris Gibson, always a great pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Alan.
And we'll be talking to you, I'm sure, much more.
Thank you, Alan. God bless.